about these Tigers youngsters? Both Green and Turnbull said 2 for 3 today with 2 walks, a run, and an RBI.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Mercy Metrics here just after Tigers game ended here on TigerMLReport.com. I'm Rogelio Casillo. Alongside me is Chris Brown, Youper, and John. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And Ray is correct. Ray McDonald with a comment already. Another great win by the Tigers, as Tyler Matson points out in the chat. 11 walks and 10 strikeouts. Not too bad controlling the strike zone. Anyway, if you like Arby's 5 for 5, then you are lucky, because once Toledo seals the win, it'll be the second 5 for 5 where all 5 teams in the system won. And Chris, that was happened twice in 2021 too, correct?
At least once in 2021. That was never happened once last year, but I'm looking now. Toledo has just given up at least one run. It is, last I checked, it was 6-4. Still waiting on the update here. I probably should just turn the game on, but yes, it's possible that Toledo might not secure this. Oh, it's a three-run. It's a 3-run homer. So Toledo's now down 7-6.
I spoke too soon. So never mind. Buttons.
They still got their last ups.
Yeah, but that's. I was.
You can get 4 for 10 at Arby's. 4 for 10 at Arby's. All the roast beef you want.
Yeah, there is a, not to get too far off the subject, but it is one of my, I think the gyro from Arby's. It's not like a true traditional gyro, if you will, but that's actually not bad of a sandwich. Yeah, jinx. I should have not said anything. It's Michael was correct. I should have not said anything, but maybe also because I'm hungry and I had softball tonight. But anyway, let's not talk about food. Let's talk about the Tigers and getting some production from, as Chris mentioned right before the podcast started, Spencer Turkelson and Riley Green both going 2 for 4 this evening. And why
2 for 3.
2 for 3.
With 2 walks.
2 walks. So
yes, we see. I like it when you were just the big guy. There's like us three tiny guys in the corner.
it almost looked like something out of the Brady Bunch. Here's a story. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not gonna do that anymore. So yeah, there is production across the lineup. Zach McKinstry, again, proving his worth, weight, and gold. But tonight, to me, the story was Alex Faedo, 18 swings and misses, 10 strikeouts. Now, the question in one of the DMs on Twitter was, are the White Sox bad or Alex Faedo that good? And the answer is, yes. Alex Faedo's.
And the White Sox are bad.
Yeah, the White Sox are bad too.
But he was great tonight, yeah. Anytime you get 18 swings and misses, you're doing something. When you're starting to get close to 20, you're having a heck of a night. So, yeah, he was really impressive. That's been pretty huge so far. He came up for Turnbull, who wasn't giving him innings. You've got Wentz, who hasn't been given him innings. You've got Boyd, who hasn't been given him innings. So you needed somebody. Erod has had a couple rough starts his last two, but up until then, he was doing great. And Lorenzen has been a decent innings eater. So you need a third guy. And Fido has been coming up huge. So I think you're right to point out that he's the story of the game.
Yeah, because there's another stat. I just retweeted this, and I'm going to put it on our screen here in just a second, that some of the quality of pitch from Alex Faedo, as we go in a little bit in the numbers, in terms of pitch quality, he's top 14 in a top 8 and top 19 in quite a bit of categories, but breaks it down a little bit in terms of what kind of pitches and just quality of pitch average, quality of pitch value, number of pitches, and there's some good stuff right there. And that changeup has some really good late movement on the back right corner, or excuse me, just really good fade to it. And I think that is a pitch that we saw at times in Toledo, Chris, but it wasn't consistent. Mm-hmm. But I think that this kind of where, oh, thank you, by the way, Javier Baez in our chat said the Tigers have won 4 straight versus Chicago dating back to last season. Mm-hmm. But I'll start with you. This is where we've talked about the Tigers' depth for a while now in terms of pitching depth, and we haven't been sure what they're getting. And we've talked about the struggles, wins, but it seems like Alex Faedo is going to be here to stay.
First off, tonight, I thought he came out early. He had the glare and the shadows in his favor and got off to a great start. You could just see a couple of his at-bats, but they couldn't see the ball. And he took those first couple innings and he really built on it from there. Steve Stone was just raving about his slider. I was impressed. I thought he threw the changeup to a couple righties. It looked really good. And I don't know if he'd been doing a lot of that. So that was pretty impressive. You know what? That's what, 4 starts for him now? And he has not gotten rocked off the mound. He's given up a few home runs, but nothing egregious. He's got a lot to build on. You know, he did this once before for a few starts and then got a little shaky. So we want to see him try to extend this as far as he can. But there was nothing to not like tonight. It was as good a start as anybody not named E-Rod has had for them this year.
Yeah, and I just had a question because I know we talked about it in the offseason about him changing his arm angle and how Avila had him alter that. As you guys think that has played a big role in kind of his resurgence in a way and how he's looked a lot better as a pitcher?
That's why I wrote an article about it, John, because I felt like that was something that played up. And the thing is, sometimes unless you're watching stuff in Toledo or you're watching people pitch on a regular basis, it's hard to tell because you can look at a box score and go, that doesn't really look really good. But it's not, when you're looking at minor league players, it is the sum of their box score. It's more than just a box score. You have to look at a situation where, for example, early on, like this, a prime example of this, Will Vest. Will Vest did not have his fastball going at all until later on, and he was still getting hit up. But his fastball is getting back to what it was, the velocity was last year. Because in spring training, it was like 91, 92. Early on Toledo, it wasn't that effective. But then Vest started coming on, and then now he's been a completely different pitcher. It's the same thing with Fajardo. But when you hear, from my experience, I don't know about you, Chris, but when people get shocked about when they bring up somebody, look at whoever the coach recommends, and they look at more than just the stats, and they look a little deeper. And I think with Fajardo was the case because he went back to what worked with him for Florida, where he was successful.
So there are a couple things with Fajardo. Like, he pitched well last year, and I think, but then there was an injury, right? Like,
right.
He got injured, and that's been a story for him in pro ball. He's been dealing with a lot of injuries, so you just got to hope that he can get through that. But the big thing I've noticed, and I was talking to John, ESPN tweeted this out, that Fajardo was the first, or he's just the third Tigers pitcher in however many years to have a start with 10 strikeouts, no walks, and 3 hits or fewer. And it's him, Denny McClain, and Anibal Sanchez going back. So you're going back 50, 60 years. And you notice the big thing with him is the drop in walks right now. With walking guys at like 10% clip last year, it's down to 1%, 2% this year. He's throwing tons of strikes. And that is the one thing where you wonder about when you're trying to rebuild a guy's mechanics. Oh, I'm worried about your mechanics. We want to do this and do this. If the guy learned to pitch one particular way, maybe it's best to just let him continue to pitch that way. Because if he's going back to his old mechanics and he's throwing strikes, that's more important than whatever other advantage you think you might be getting from more extension or more deception or something like that. And there's a similar guy, Grant Herter, pitches for Erie. Had another outstanding start tonight, 5 innings, 1 run. He's been doing that all year. He's basically like a left-handed Fido. It's such a funky motion and delivery, and it doesn't look athletic, and you're like, how does this work? But they're letting go with it, and it has been working. Yeah, I think, John, to answer your question, yeah, I think it's big for him to go back to his old mechanics because it's what he was used to. It seems kind of simple, but yeah, who knew?
Man, he's getting hurt all the time with the new mechanics.
Oh, look at that. Blood right coming through. Blood, my man.
Let him give us money. Is it?
That ball is gone.
I feel like Blood Right.
All time.
You feel like what?
I feel like Blood Right is, yeah, it's giving us money every single show. I feel.
You know what, Blood? God bless you.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That's it's cool great. Too. Whatever, just, man. It's
I hope this isn't blood money. That's kind of weird.
I was wondering where you were going. No, but yeah, all jokes aside, it is, yeah, Blood, yeah, thank you, Blood. Seriously, for real, that's really cool.
Very cool.
No, it's one of those things where I think that for all the things we've talked about this year, about the Tigers, if there's one constant that still remains among the last several seasons has been pitching development. Where you look at the White Sox as an example, because Andy Katz has done what he can, but the White Sox are not at the level where the Tigers are in sense of pitching development and taking guys that they have. Look at Chase Shreve, for example. After Baltimore, he's been pretty consistent. And Blood is the official sponsor of the Motor City Metrics and Tiger Mileage Report podcast. Thank you, Alex. It's, I'm going to get a Blood Right logo, just like him, just that logo he's using in there. But no, all jokes
aside. Funny to get a chair that doesn't sink constantly during the show.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always dropping down. Pretty good. Sorry.
But it's one of those things where I don't really worry. It's not that I don't worry about the pitching staff. I worry lack of depth, of course. But it is bizarre. Not bizarre, but it is refreshing to see starts like this, because it's an example of the Tigers are just going, you know what? If it's not broke, don't fix it. Sorry about that. Our bad. And to me, it's a sign of more real true continuous change in the organization.
Yeah. So I remember paying attention throughout the rebuild to the Tigers farm system, and they had the big five prospects. I used to look at them. It was Mize, Manning, Bo Burrows, Franklin Perez, and Alex Fadeo. They were all at one point top 100 prospects. And I looked at that as like the future of this rotation. And a couple of those guys haven't worked out, in Bo Burrows and Franklin Perez. But I think, sorry, Chris, you're looking at me weird. I'm confused right now.
Yeah, no, when you said Bo Burrows, I was like,
huh? Yeah, it's Bo Burrows.
Okay.
It's fine. And it's Alex Fadeo, which it's good. We can add that to the drinking game, I think.
Oh, when I say someone's name wrong?
It's fine. No, it's not. You don't say it's just Fadeo. You just call him Fadeo. And I get it. This feels like it should be Fadeo.
This thing, it's Fadeo, rhymes with Laredo. I don't know if you've ever been to Laredo, Texas.
I've heard. You told me that one. I forget.
Yeah, you can't say that one on the air, though.
Yeah, I can't say that.
That was that was Lang rhymes with. We will stop it.
But yeah, in terms of.
Thing?
No.
It's worse.
Okay. All right.
Moving on.
And, yeah.
I'll stop making faces. I apologize.
Okay. But again, coming into the series too, the White Sox are what they are. The White Sox are not a very good team. They're 10 games under 500. This was a team that some people thought was going to contend. And if you're getting Steve Stone's attention, that's a good thing, because he's also calling White Sox games. So at this point, he's also really probably just frustrated too. Oh, Josh, thank you.
Exquisite.
That ball is gone.
I know I saved that for the Tiger Mileage podcast.
Touch them all time.
But I'm in a good mood this evening. I went pretty softball and we lost. But Max Bolton was hitting balls in the outfield, and I felt like a proud coach, because Max was working on his swing mechanics, and I showed him a YouTube link, and he got all. I'm just proud. I'm a proud coach.
He broke up. He broke out the YouTube. I don't know. It's fine. Yeah. He's a hockey guy. So
yeah. He does play two nights a week too. But he does play hockey too, two nights a week. I've come to find out. But no, the Tigers are now two games under 500. But I wanted to talk about the World Series, and the reason why I wanted to mention that was A, because we of course see to recap that. But B, was the amount of clutch hitting. Like we're seeing a theme across the last few weeks. Clutch hitting, something that has been absent from this team for a while. I'll start with you, John. Is there anything, and especially in the Kansas City series alone, it just seemed like they were working the counts pretty well and coming up clutch.
Yeah, to me, it's Torkelson and Green. They've been absolutely on fire in the month of May, and tonight they were both great. I think collectively, they were on base 8 out of the 10 times in this game tonight. And yeah, they have really taken the reins of this offense. And some of the veterans that have gotten off to hot starts in May, like Baez, like Eric Haas, like Andy Ibanez, they've all struggled down the stretch. But Torkelson and Green have been that one constant in the lineup for them. And you've got contributions from Mikhail Badu, Matt Vierling. But yeah, it's really been Torkelson and Green. Zach Short has had a couple of big hits. That kind of seems like that's in his DNA, to come up with a big hit every once in a while. But yeah, I would give credit to the two young guys in the middle, that 3-4 combo that we put so much emphasis on this season, that they need to take steps forward. And in the month of May, they have been pretty much all we could ask for from those two youngsters.
Youngsters, look at you. You're not using, look at that. But if far as in the World Series, what did you see the Donaldson Scope last night, until that at bat, Donaldson Scope was pretty much, he's been in the Tigers' doghouse. He's been in the doghouse more so than, despite Andy Baez's struggles, Scope has been the Tigers fans' whipping boy here for the entire season. But
he got himself a cookie and he didn't miss it. That was, yeah. It was amazing. The thing about last night that I liked is they hit the ball out of the ballpark or they got some doubles. They got more extra base hits. They shortened up the sequence it took to score a run. It didn't take two singles, a walk, and an error. They were able to put the ball over the fence and score runs and win the game. And that is something we need to see more as we move along. Now, tonight, they were able to patch together singles and so on, but the White Sox are helping out with a ton of walks. You're not going to get that every night. Hopefully, we keep seeing some more power come through as the weather warms up. Even Monday night when they won in KC, I think they walked 10 times that night. They've gotten some help from some iffy pitching by the opposition. Giolito tonight looked terrible, but it's a two-way street. They can say that the other team walked a lot of those guys, but the Tigers earned a lot of those walks. They were patient. They did some things that we heard about in the offseason, and they want to control the strike zone. They're doing it right now. And does that make them more clutch? I don't know. It just gives them more base runner, puts another pitcher in the stretch more.
How about you, Chris? In terms of the World Series, what did you observe?
Yeah, I think in general, you know, I'm not one of these people that feels like a team is just going to be awful with minutes scoring position, or they're just terrible with the bases loaded, nobody out. There's something to that where guys are pressing. I believe in that. But to me, it's all about the opportunities. If you're getting the opportunities, eventually they're going to start cashing in on them just through the law of averages. And that's what I think we've seen in May is a real uptick in guys just getting on base one way or the other. Now, but to your point, yeah, that's a good start. It really helps to hit the ball with power then. It never hurts to hit the ball with the power, and they're still pretty far behind in that regard. But they keep getting guys on base at a decent clip all year. They're going to score more runs. It's just the way it is. So it's nice to see. But the Royals are bad. The White Sox aren't great. Giolito has been pretty good this year. He's not Cy Young level good, but he's been solid pitcher this year, and he just had a very strange outing tonight. But you also give the Tigers credit for not chasing as much as they used to.
I was just saying, Dan Dickerson, I heard, made a comment tonight that Giolito's pitching like he's pitching to last year's Detroit Tigers.
Yeah.
Where a lot of those junk pitches would have been swung at.
Yeah. So I think that's the main takeaway for me is they're putting together a lot of quality at bats. And it starts with guys like McKinstry, right? McKinstry's a great leadoff guy for this team right now, but we see it. Riley Green is seeing the ball in a way that we haven't seen in the big leagues before. He's taking walks at a high rate. He's hitting the ball hard. Torkelson's taking his walks and hitting the ball hard. Badu is showing really good plate discipline. So you got four or five guys in most nights who are going to give you really good plate appearances. And that's a great start to me.
Yeah. And the only thing about this week that was strange was watching a journeyman like Mike Mayers just carve him up on Tuesday night. His slider was, that was a good piece. He just was able to keep the Tigers were really eager against him. I thought they were maybe perhaps overestimated him or something to that effect. But yeah, that was the only start of this week that I was like, who is this guy? I have no idea who this guy is.
Yeah, that was the classic, like the Tigers go out and get shut down by a nobody. But yeah, sometimes nobody's getting the big leagues because they have decent stuff. And he's had a career high in strikeouts that night. And I don't think it was entirely the Tigers being terrible. I think he struck out Riley Green two times in a row on really good breaking balls right at the bottom of the zone. It's like, I don't know. It's people hate to hear it, but it's like the tip your cap performance. But I thought they had a chance to break through later in the game. It just didn't happen.
And by the way, Jim Price has been out for a couple of weeks now, and Andy Dierks has been in the move. So we're hoping that hopefully everything is well with Jim Price. Our thoughts are out with him because he is cornerstone down there in the press box every time. But yeah, I'm going down there. I'm actually going down there this weekend to find out. Tomorrow, Chris and I are going to be out in West Michigan for the debut of Troy Melton. And also because Chase Young has not been in the lineup for 3 days, so we're going to figure out what's going on with that. We'll get the mystery of that. We're also going to get some seats. We're not going to be
tickets. Last time we went out there, we had to move like six times. Normally, like even when we went to see Jackson Jobe's debut, which was probably one of the biggest, it may have been the biggest crowd in West Michigan last year. We got two seats right behind home plate. We were sitting, and Evan joined us, right? Evan Petzl?
Yeah.
I think. And we just sat there and nobody ever came and asked us to move. And then last week when we went, it was like 6-7 different people. Yeah. Like we moved up and down. It wasn't just us. It was also the TrackMan guys or the Hawkeye guys for the Tigers. It's just a really bizarre one.
Why do people, okay, I'm sorry to anybody out there. Why are you getting to the game in the fourth inning? Literally, it was until the third or fourth inning. Some of these people were coming out for seats. I get the concession stands were busy, but it was just like, come on. I felt after a while, I'm like, on purpose. Now you're just now. Tomorrow we can go see the. Tomorrow we're gonna have. I'm gonna bust out the ticket. This is my seat. Get away from me. Simple as. No, I love West Michigan, and those fans, they have every right. They have every right to pay for the ticket, of course. But just sometimes, then what cracks me up is then they'll stay around for an inning and leave again. You can't go back in a seat, and then they won't come back to the seventh inning.
Yeah, I don't know where they're going.
Yeah, I don't know where they're going. I don't know. But either way, I'm not going to complain about it too much because they are paying customers, and we're just grateful to be out there. Yeah. But hopefully everything's well with Jim Price.
Absolutely. So what do you guys think has unlocked at least some little bit of Akil Badu's power? Because both of these home runs were bombs, and he has done nothing like that for over a year.
That's weird because it's been in there. We saw it in Toledo last year. We saw a little bit in Toledo this year too. I just part of it, and it's funny if you look at when you're watching game day, they'll have the little hot zones built in there for you, and it's just ice cold blue on the inside to him. And so I don't know if he's just been focusing on getting balls away from him and poking him the other way or driving back up the middle. But yeah, he's at the point now where he seems comfortable enough to take those chances where, and that's like the hill old as time, right? Which when guys who have raw power, but they don't necessarily hit for it, once they learn to find pitches they can pull, it really comes out. So hopefully he's going to do that a little bit more consistently now. Any power you get from him is a bonus, right? You're hoping that he's put the ball in play, doing damage with his legs, taking walks. But yeah, it sure makes him look like a regular when he's hitting for power and doing the other thing.
Exactly. And when he starts to look like a real hitter, now you can get a skeptic like me on board that you can lengthen that lineup enough to win some ball games. Because it was now you don't have to shut it down after the fifth batter in the lineup. We'll see.
Yeah, I think... I just think it was just like a matter of time. We obviously saw the power in his rookie year. And I think as he's gotten more comfortable, he's going to run into a couple home runs. And I think that's what's happened. But yeah, like you said, lengthening the lineup, I think he's filled in really nicely and taking advantage of the opportunity he's been given. And yeah, like I said, I think he's just getting more confident. He's getting more at bats. And eventually he was going to run into a couple of them.
And I think one of the biggest things, too, is that during all this, what's been interesting is the lack of kind of Jake Rogers just quietly struggling a little bit. Like he's been not, the power isn't there hasn't been there recently. And you're seeing the same thing with Eric Haas. And this is, so the Tigers are doing this really without getting, the Tigers were among, I think one of the, in terms of offensively speaking from the catchers last year, down the middle of the pack towards the bottom of the pack, and they're still doing a good job defensively with it, but it's interesting to see that in terms of offense every night, it is somebody coming up a little differently. But yeah, you will hopefully coming into June that the Rodgers and Haas picks it up a little bit in terms of just getting their averages up a little bit. But all right, it's now time for our first segment of the evening. All right, it's time for Inside the Numbers. And John, why don't you kick us off with your Inside the Number this week?
Yeah, so we did talk about this a little bit, but I just wanted to go a little bit more specific. Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson's OPS in the month of May. Riley Green right now sitting at 1045. Don't really think that's going to be sustainable for him, but his OPS is over 800 for the season. I saw a tweet, his OPS was 1 point higher than Austin Riley. I thought that was interesting. But yeah, if he could keep this up, if his could be the 800 OPS hitter we talked about in the offseason, he's on absolute fire right now. He looks like a middle of the order hitter for the Tigers. And then Spencer Torkelson, his OPS for the season is around 680, but for the month of May, 807 OPS, which if he can continue that throughout the rest of the year, that would be huge for him. He's turned down a couple balls. He was drawing more walks. He had that 4-walk night. He had 2 more walks tonight. But yeah, just specific numbers on those two. Really looking like the players we want them to be.
And just to add one thing there, that 1 walk he drew tonight was actually bad luck, I thought. He had 2 runners on, and he had a 3-1 count coming up, and Giolito made a violation, and he had to give him, they had to walk him to bring up Vierling. So that was unfortunate. I think I would have rather seen Torkelson get a 3-1 count.
Yeah, that would have been, he probably did some damage. That's funny. I'll take a walk, but yeah, I'm sure he wants to launch.
Yeah, it's like the classic beer league softball where everybody, you really want to swing, but you can't because they didn't give you anything good to hit. Youper, what is your inside of number?
Mine is 117. That is 117 miles per hour. So far this year, there have been 10 balls hit with a 117 or higher exit velocity in AAA or MLB. Okay. So of those 10, 3 of them belong to
Ellie De La Cruz. Prospect.
I think Chris must know who it is.
Sorry.
Who is it?
I said Ellie De La Cruz.
Oh, yes, it is. There you go.
Boom. Sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, he owns 3 of those 10 balls. He is just smoking everything, cruising along at a 999 OPS, a pretty sporty little number. You watch the video on that guy. I'll tell you, you got to think. I know there's some swing and miss here and there, but 999 OPS doesn't lie. I think you want him in the majors soon. And they just called up Matt McClain in Cincinnati. They have some other young guys brewing. Nick Senzel is actually showing a pulse. Or Senzel. Is it Senzel or Senzel? What do we do?
I always say Senzel.
Yeah. Okay, me too.
So anyways, Senzel Washington.
I don't think the Reds are a good team, but I think they got some things brewing. And Ellie De La Cruz, he's a fun watch.
Yeah, watching that guy against West Michigan last year was just, yeah. By the way, hold on.
Yeah.
Exquisite.
Thank you, Samuel, for the 550. And that's awesome. He's a Montreal local.
Canadian? Is that 550 Canadian?
That's 550. That's our first ever Canadian donation. So, Samuel, thank you. Thank you.
And you know what's ironic? Toonies, a loony, something else.
I want some Dutch kroner.
No, you know what? I wish I had a bunch of my Expo stuff. All my Expo hats. You guys are witnesses to the amount of Expo stuff that I have in my baseball collection. And so that's really cool. But also, the Windsor Spitfire is one of the best hockey jerseys out there as well. So Chris, what is your inside number?
Mine is 4. Pretty simple one. This is tonight was the 4th time this year the Tigers have walked at least 8 times in a game, which is tied for the 3rd most in baseball this year. With St. Louis and the Dodgers, and it's behind only Baltimore with 5 games and the Padres with 6. The Tigers did that as a team twice last year. All season, they walked 8 times in a game twice. They've done it twice in, what, the last 2 games, last 3 games? It was something we were talking about earlier. Like they're running into some bad pitching, maybe, but they're also not letting bad pitching dictate what they're going to swing at. So I think it's a very positive sign for them. It is. I don't know if it's dominating the strike zone, which is just forever going to be the albatross around Scott Harris's collar until the Tigers are walking 20%. But yeah, it's a positive sign. It goes back to what I was saying earlier, where you get on base and things will happen eventually. So that's my it. And I guess I could do a bonus one if you want. When I was looking up before, this might be fun for you, Raj. We don't want to be too negative on Eddie Ibanez right now because the Tigers won, so it doesn't matter. But he is in an 0-for-32 slump, which is insane. 9 straight games without a hit. And I was looking, and that's the longest hitless streak for a Tigers hitter since 1995.
Hold on. Can I guess who it was?
That's why I thought you might like this.
Okay,
yeah.
So 1995. Okay, so is it an outfielder?
You know what? I don't even remember. I feel like he was a shortstop, but let me look.
He was a shortstop?
I'm going to say
you can't guess.
He was an outfielder. I'm sorry.
He was an outfielder. He was an outfielder.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Bobby Higginson.
No. I'm not going to say it could be. You know what? You could put him in there, but
Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
You know what? I'm going to go with Danny Bautista.
Exactly.
Yep. This is the most.
Yes. I don't know who that is.
We just saw his son play. His son plays for Lansing.
Yeah.
Danny Bautista went 0 for 35 in 1995 stretch with only five strikeouts. And that's what's wild about Ibanez is I think he only has six or seven strikeouts in this stretch. When you look at the other guys who've gone 30 at-bats without a hit, they all have a lot of strikeouts. It's like Mike Gerber, 0 for 30 with 17 strikeouts. Mikey Matuk, 0 for 31 with 14 Ks. Ronnie Rodriguez, 0 for 31,
15 strikeouts.
Oh, man.
Oh, so we've got to give Sean. Hold on. Where is it? Oh, here it is.
Exquisite.
He gets two of them.
Exquisite.
I don't want to burn out the Greg one either, but thank you, Sean.
From Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Yes, I like it. I like that. Thank you.
Probably near Pigeon Forge. I have no idea. Good to tell you.
I'm due to go to Tennessee. I haven't been to Tennessee since baseball tournament when I was like 15. So
do people have to drink if I mention cities in other states?
No,
I mean, with the drinking game committee.
So Alex wanted to know if there's any news on. No, again, it's been really Alex. It's been really unusually quiet when it comes to him. So that means something might be a little more serious than that. So usually by now we hear some sort of update, but I haven't ever heard anything. So my number this week is it's twofold, if you will. It's nine, and that's Christopher Morel's nine home runs are tied for the second most home runs in a player's first 12 games since 1900. And the other two being 2001's Luis Gonzalez and 1997 Larry Walker. Behind only Mike Schmidt in 1976. But there's another part of this, too. He is another number five. He's the first Cub since Sammy Sosa to home run five straight games. And the other one, I've stat in there, just throwing in there, too, which he is the first player in MLB history to have a hit and a run in the first 12 games he's played in a season. Yeah. By the way, he wanted to tell you it's 2 hours west of Dollywood, Chris.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, he is doing a lot of things. The Cubs, he was sent down and then they called him back up. And he's been just destroying the ball.
Yeah. And, I think he was playing for Iowa when you was there.
Yeah. Wasn't he, Chris? Or wasn't he down there when you were there?
Yes, but he didn't play. I think he only played the first night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he had a night off or something. He didn't do much.
And he's still doing this with a 37.5 strikeout. So if you're a big fan of Gage Workman, then you are.
That makes you question the staying power. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. There was but anyway, that was my insider number for the week. So now let's go look across the league with our second segment. All right, the bad and the ugly this week. Uper, what is your bad and the ugly this week?
All right, my good. Second week in a row, I'm going back to Colt Keith because you know why? That's pretty good. Two more hits tonight. Hitting .325 with a .980 OPS. I'm sorry. That gets your attention. And he's moving up in rankings, which he should. The question is now, when is he moving up out of here? Everybody's expecting to hear it at any point. Hasn't happened yet. I don't want to get too jacked up about it because I tend not to. That's fine. But I opened the door on it last week. I'll talk about it again. Why can't he hit his way to Detroit this summer? We're seeing more and more young players get that opportunity. You look at Zach Neto for the Angels starting to really come on. He started like 1 for 16. Since then, he's been hitting about .300. And the guy looks like a ball player and with very little experience. Colt Keith can play. And I don't know if we necessarily, let's say we get into July, is he going to be overmatched anymore in Major League Baseball than, you know, in AAA? It's hard to say. But he's getting to that point where, from a prospect perspective, he's going to be the real deal.
Well, let's talk about that for a quick second, because I think that's definitely something that I think should be discussed real quick. I think personally that there's not much of a difference between Toledo and Erie myself. And I think if they're going to have him play third, then I think you should stay in Erie. Now, if they have him playing second base, which he did play at West Michigan at second base, then you could do that if they decided to call up somebody like that. In terms of pros and cons, really skipping AAA, it's just a competition level. because it really, if he's doing, he's doing this in double A, and that's enough to me, at least, to say it's worth us, at least at this point, a September call off. We, again, when Chris and I originally had, like, when I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to put Cole Keith number one after what I saw last year. Chris was like, eh, like, we were going back and forth about it. But ever since I saw him in Lansing, May 6th of 2022,
mm-hmm.
he's arguably the best hitter I've seen in a long time in this system, because it just, he can hit anything. And I remember, I'm not going to say who, but some people were like, Cole, why not? Now all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, it makes sense now. It's, yeah, welcome to the trend, asshole. Or I'm just joking, but no, I'm not really joking. But no, it's, to me, I think he's fine at just continue to do what he's doing in Erie. And if they need to call him up to Toledo, they need to. But I don't think going to Toledo is going to do anything different, to me at least. I don't, if you want to put him at Toledo because you want them, you want to see him close, he's closer to you, and you live in Detroit, then yes. Okay, then absolutely. Because then if you're like, let's say me, for example, he's 45 minutes away from my house, comparatively speaking to driving 4 hours.
Sure.
So if I'm being selfish, yes, I wouldn't mind him in Toledo. And for that only reason. Yeah. Anyway.
I will just add that yeah, he reminds me of Riley Green as a hitter, except Colt Keith puts the ball in the air more than Riley Green. And I was just, his numbers against lefties this year are superior to his numbers against righties, which are not bad. He's got a 1,048 OPS against lefties this year. 364, 434, 614. Two homers, three doubles, a triple. He's got seven home runs, and he's hitting 301 against righties. Yeah, you could send him up to AAA to face a few more of the crafty pitchers. That's basically the only difference. Guys who can execute their breaking balls more often, things like that. And he might struggle for a few weeks, but he's a hitter. He's going to hit. He'll continue to hit. He'll hit in the big leagues one day. Yeah. So it is, I think it's a matter of how confident are you in his defense? How much do you think he's ready for the big league in terms of hitting? And it could be quick. We saw that Kerry Carpenter was older, but they sent him up to, he destroyed double A. They're like, okay, fine. He's up to triple A now. And once the playoff thing was decided, and we think that may be an issue too. They've got like 3-4 more weeks before the first half of the playoff race is decided. But yeah, it could be like they send him up to Toledo and he goes bonkers for 2 weeks and like, okay, whatever. Come on up.
Sure.
Come on up. Cole Keith, come on down. Let's play. That's fine. Anyway, I know you're in the middle of your segment. Sorry.
Yeah. No, just like I said, I just wanted to highlight that Cole Keith is just, we could do, at some point on the Tiger Minor League Report, we'll probably end up doing like a Cole Keith breakdown. Every time I put anything, we put up Cole Keith, it's immediate. It's immediate. It's just kind of people going, bring him up. But yeah. In this case, where to? Toledo? Okay, if you want, again, if you want to see him in Toledo because you're selfish and you want to be closer, by all means, I get it. No, I get it. You know what? Carbon footprint, ladies and gentlemen. Carbon footprint. Less gas. All right, continue. Go ahead. Continue on.
Okay, so that was my good. I went with the sad here in the middle instead of the bad. One thing that makes me a little sad, not a big deal, but for instance, the other night, Mike Trout hits a home run, passes Joe DiMaggio, okay, all-time record, or all-time home run list. I always feel bad when World War II veterans get passed in statistical categories, only because, let's face it, they sacrificed a big chunk of their career. Joe DiMaggio missed 3 full seasons plus part of a fourth. Nope. And prime years in his late 20s, right? This would have been years where he was accruing big numbers, probably cost him at least 80 to maybe 110 home runs in that time. So he got stuck on 361. No question in my mind, he pushes 475 if he hadn't had to go fight in a war. Ted Williams missed part of two wars, World War II and Korea. So I always like to try to recognize those guys because we have fewer and fewer World War II veterans left among us. I believe the stat I saw recently was there's still like 1,800 dying every day. You got to respect the World War II people and always keep that in your mind when those stats are talked about. When ugly happened tonight, and it involved Riley Green, it was the little flare hit behind second base, okay? And I don't know if he forgot how many outs there were or what, the bases were loaded, He took off running on the little flare. Roman Gonzalez catches it. Easy out at second. Here's what upset me. One, yeah, that's bad base running. Okay, fine. That happens. Our good friend Shep. Okay, I don't con Shep. He's okay. But he says something like, well, Riley was running on contact. No, he wasn't. Fine. Maybe he was, but he shouldn't be. Okay. And I just wonder how often the announcers for the team are encouraged not to criticize. Because I'm sorry, that's just a play to say, you know what? It was a brain dead moment he just had. Call it out. I think we respect that a whole lot more than trying to say, oh, he was going on contact. Ugh. We know he wasn't. We know he screwed up. I would like to see that change. And that's a common thing for me. Just they could be a little tougher on things that go wrong.
I think it's a universal thing. And for example, I always think of what happened to Mark Champion. Mark Champion was too critical on the Lions and cost him his job, which I think was ridiculous because all he was doing was calling him out and he wasn't doing anything bad. This day was one of those, the Mark Champion firing has never made a lot of sense to me. And yeah, so anyway, that's just, it could be the case. There's just, sometimes I think in this town, we tend to, and this happens on Twitter too, where somebody will be too critical, Mark, excuse me, and sometimes people will get upset about it. And sometimes it's the truth. Sometimes the truth hurts, but sometimes also you don't have to be a dick either. But at the same time, you're right, Youper. I don't think it's being too critical. But we did hear about a situation, Chris. Remember that situation we heard about last year with that one player that was, we overheard talking about somebody being too critical on the broadcast?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to say, we can't say who and what, but that was interesting. But, Harrison, look at this, Harrison.
Good name.
Exquisite.
And you know what? I'm going to give you I'm going to give you this one because I love your, no, I haven't heard, no, you know what?
That ball is gone.
But, and he asked a question.
All time.
Thank you for the $5. Go ahead.
He has a question.
Oh, yes.
So go ahead. We have already answered that. So he said, will Wentz get sent down tomorrow if he's bad? Great shows, always love it. At what point can rookies be brought up and save a year of control? As far as I can tell, Saturday is the deadline for when you can get a year of control already, but Saturday is the deadline for the Super 2, I believe, which means you can get that extra year of control without paying 4 years of arbitration.
Yeah, for the extra year of control, that was gone 10 days into the season, more or less.
But Wentz, we talked about him before, there's not really any replacement options, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one name I thought I would just maybe moving Mason Engler to the rotation. But other than that, like I heard the idea of Tyler Alexander as like an opener. Yeah, what other options do they really have right now?
Yeah, unless they want to bring up one of the arms that they signed from Tampa recently where they use him as an opener, perhaps. Maybe that. But I don't know. That might be, again, I think Wentz is still going to get as many plenty of chances until if Reese Olsen starts rattling off another start like he did, a couple other starts like he did, then you maybe can have that conversation. But for now, I see Wentz staying in the rotation, but just out of necessity. But I think with Wentz, there's stuff there. I know there was somebody mentioned in the chat earlier, he's like a 4A pitcher. I think it's just him figuring it out. When he can get the ball down in the zone, he's very good. I'm not going to give up on him just yet, but we'll see if it continues to be where he's just getting the ball just flat. There's like when his cutter's good, really. But let's see here. John, what is your good, the bad, the ugly?
All right. So my good was the Arizona Diamondbacks offense. I think they've got something really special cooking out there. Gabriel Moreno, who they acquired this offseason. They've got Christian Walker, who's been a really solid veteran. Ketel Marte, Loris Gurriel, Paven Smith, Corbin Carroll. Just a lot of good young hitters. They've got Drew Jones, I believe, coming up the system. Jordan Lawler, a really bright future in Arizona. And they're in the race for a playoff spot. And with teams like the Mets and the Phillies struggling, they have a real shot at making the playoffs this year. And that would be really big for them. And I was a person that doubted them. I didn't really believe in their starting pitching. Maybe they do need another starter. I think Erod is a perfect fit for them there. They have Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly. Other than that, haven't gotten consistent starting pitching. But yeah, they're off to a really good start and they deserve a lot of praise for the offensive talent that they've been able to build. My bad was Toronto. They are currently in last place in the AL East right now. They're 2-8 in their last 10, 26-25. And this is a team that had World Series expectations. They haven't won a World Series since the 90s, haven't been to a World Series since the 90s. Obviously, you have Vlad Obispo. They've spent a lot of money. They've made big trades for guys like Jose Berríos, Dalton Varsho this offseason. They've completely depleted their farm system. And for them to be in last place right now, I'm not going to say it's World Series or bust for them, but in the Vlad Guerrero era, they haven't been able to win a playoff series yet. And I'm not going to say they're the White Sox of this year, but their season is a failure if they don't make the playoffs. And right now, last place in the AL East. And then my ugly, it was just the people reacting to the Meyer patch on the Tigers. I was surprised we didn't get into that yet. A lot of people were upset by that. I don't really care, but that was just something. And then I did have a bonus ugly. So I tweeted out something yesterday. It was, what could a package of Matt Boyd and Marco Lorenzen bring back for the trade deadline? And some of the responses I got, I want to run them past you guys. I want to get your guys' favorite response.
I just want to point out something. Yeah. Because somebody we know DM'd me about some of the tweets from the Mercy Metrics account asking, quote, are we crazy or what are we doing? It's Twitter. Okay. If you listen to the show and if you know us as writers like Chris and I or you when he's writing, or you, John, it is not, it's called engagement. You start a conversation and you go, for example, the big three question that John put out there, it's called engagement. If you really pay attention to what we say and what we do, then it's fine. I don't understand what is the big deal about, if you're going to analyze a tweet, then you have problems. I'm sorry. You. It's just, to me, it's just ridiculous. Just stay in your, just if you don't like the tweet, fine. Don't like it. I don't care. But if people want to have a discussion, not every fan is the same. Not everybody's the same. That's my point. Go ahead, John. Sorry.
All right. So let's see some of these responses, I guess. We got Robbie. He said a player to be named, Boyd, a player to be named, and Lorenzen could get a 25 to 30 prospects. That's a good comment. That's what I was looking for. The other comment, someone said they don't want to trade Lorenzen. I could see that. But then we get into the interesting ones. So we got... we got Darwell Lugo.
Darwell Lugo?
Sorry. Yeah. Okay, so... yes, we got Darwell Lugo, we got a can of beans, we got two soy packets and a half-eaten cheeseburger, a used washing machine, we got a picture from the guy from Rookie of the Year, the bench coach, I don't know his name, and 37-year-old.
Stern.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that was, no, what's
the guy's name? The goofy, he's the goofy.
Yeah, I was going to say Rosengarten, but that's the kid's name.
Yeah. And then we got a 37-year-old Brennan Bosch. So I thought those were a little funny. I just wanted to share them. But
going back to the patch.
Sean with the comment of the night. Sorry. You're analyzing tweets. Please go touch grass, walk a dog, go to do everything else. Thank you.
We're several tweets above replacement. That's all I know. But going back to the patch, we had that pool. I had Sam Burstein law firm. Okay. Thought that was going to win. Raj won. He had Meyer. Chris had Beltire, a big Beltire guy. John's, you know, again, controversial. When he went, when he put in the pool, Big Lola's Gentleman's Club for the patch, I thought, hey, he's going on a limb. But that didn't work. I think Big Lola's would have been the winner if they had a little better reputation. But we'll go with Meyer. That's fine.
Boring. I don't remember us even discussing that. That's weird. We're poor out of that's gonna get us banned from YouTube.
Sorry, it's YouTube, but just, that's why I only played a few seconds. And also, rest in peace to Tina Turner, who passed away yesterday,
rolling on the river Styx.
So Chris, you're up next.
My good is the Baltimore Orioles. I didn't plan on saying this ever this year. The Orioles used to be one of our annual, you could count on them being ugly and bad. but they beat the Yankees tonight, 3-1, I believe. They are 33-17, the second best record in baseball behind the Rays. They've had six pitchers start games this year, and I'm curious if you guys can name more than two.
For Baltimore?
Can you name two?
Tyler Wells.
That's one.
Spencer Watkins?
No.
Dean Kramer.
All right.
That's a good one.
Cole Irvin.
Yeah.
Grayson Rodriguez.
Grayson Rodriguez is, you guys got like
Kyle Gibson.
I think you got them all.
Yeah, look at
it. Are you looking at rosters?
No, I'm looking right at the screen, man.
Mine's going Mayer even, Bradish.
Oh, yeah, you got five out of six. Kyle Bradish is the other one. But yeah, that's not exactly a murderer's row of pitching, right? And yet they're 33-17. Their offense, they've got eight different guys with five home runs this year. By WRC Plus, they're the eighth best offense. They're not setting the world on fire, but still very good. They're 11th in home runs, 5th in stolen bases, 5th in walk rate. Just an annoying team of relative nobodies that are playing incredible, solid baseball. And it's tough to look at because of the way that Baltimore has rebuilt parallels, the Tigers. And Baltimore just kind of hit it in the lottery twice, and the Tigers maybe didn't. We don't know. Time will tell. But it was pretty clear that Adley Rutschman was the obvious choice in 2019. And Mize and Tork were both very good prospects, but not generational talents like Rutschman. But in any event, Orioles, very, very good. My bad, and this is somebody we just saw, is Bobby Witt Jr. Now, you gotta look a little bit beyond, because there's certain aspects about Bobby Witt Jr. that are pretty good. He's got 7 home runs, which is 2 more than anybody on the Tigers. He's got 14 steals, which is way more than anybody on the Tigers. The Tigers, I think, have 25 as a team, but he's only hitting .227 on the year. He's barely walking. The WRC plus is like 76. And one thing that I noticed is he has the worst WPA in all of baseball, win probability added. So he's basically doing all the wrong things at all the wrong times on offense. And yeah, it's bad for him. But I usually keep the bad to guys who I think can get better. It's been rough for him this year.
They've moved him out of the one hole.
Yeah, that helped.
Which they had to do. And what I've been hearing is some better defensive comments than last year. That he's making the routine play that he sometimes muffed last year. Yeah. So I've been a big Bobby Witt guy since he was in high school. So I am a little disappointed. He's on my fantasy team. Yes, I know it was boring to talk about. But I've been a little disappointed with him. But
yeah,
twice last night in the Tiger suit, he hit the ball on the button and didn't get rewarded.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see what happens for him as he comes along. The guy who can play for them is Pascal Quino. That guy's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, the one Bobby Witt flyout, I think, that it would have been a home run at Wrigley Field. Nowhere else. But had he been playing at Wrigley Field, that would have been a go-ahead home run. Yeah, you feel a little bit unlucky there. I've got a bonus crazy here. This is good, bad, crazy, ugly. This crazy is from C. Trent Rosenkranz. He's a great beat writer about the Cincinnati Reds. And he tweeted out something tonight. He said, the Louisville Bats won tonight and are now 24-23, which makes them above .500 for the first time since 2016.
Wow.
The AAA affiliate of the Cincinnati Reds have not been above .500 since 2016, which is insane. We've talked about them not being good, but I didn't realize it was that bad. Yeah.
That is crazy.
I just saw that. And my ugly is Gene Segura. Now, there was that one report that the Tigers were looking at Gene Segura. I still don't know what to think about that, because the only place we saw it was in one like newspaper article after the Marlins signed him, which felt like, the Tigers were looking at him too. We swear. But boy, if the Tigers were looking at him, they dodged a bullet, because Gene Segura is batting .188 this year with 0 home runs in 43 games. His weighted runs created plus is 34. And somehow he's managed to ground it to 10 double plays already.
Wow.
And which gives me my chance. I do this once a year to break out the old stat RE24, which people who've been around for a while might remember, but it basically, it's all about run expectancy based on the 24 base out stakes, the number of runners on base and the number of outs there are. And there are certain run expectations for every different version, from bases loaded and no outs to a man on first with 2 outs. Segura is, negative 20.41 RE24 this year. So that means that he's been more than 20 runs worse than expected. on offense this year. Wow. When that's like a negative 20 RBIs, if you will. And you want to compare that to Jonathan Schoop has been the worst for the Tigers. And it's impressive because he hasn't been playing much, but he's at negative 8.4. So Segura has been 13 runs worse than Jonathan Schoop this year, and he's playing every day. But yeah, that's ugly to me.
Yeah, that's a really good one. So my good is the Tigers' next opponent, which is the Texas Rangers, and here's a big reason why. They have scored in double digits this year 12 times. 12 times. They have the best run differential in all of baseball. And among that 12 times they've scored more than double digits, 4 times they've scored 15 or more runs. So it's not against, like, they do play Oakland, granted, but they scored in the first 2 games of the season, they scored 11 and then 16 runs. So the Tigers have quite a bit of a handful here. And this is a team that went back-to-back 12 runs on Kansas City on the road. And that's, Kauffman Stadium is not, it's more of a pitcher park.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to do that no problem. And a place where the Tigers have always traditionally struggled, Anaheim, LA, whatever you want to call it, they put up 16 runs. And so how is that good? The reason why that's good, Tyler, is because really, they're good. The Rangers are good. I got to point that out because I think the reason why I wanted to mention this is because despite all, this is why, to me, good. They have had injuries to Jacob deGrom, who, again, we all figured this, he wasn't going to live up to the contract. Not to sound cruel or crass or anything, but the reason why I think this is a team considered early on is the amount of, even in those games, there's a couple games in there. There's quite a few games in there where they are, when they either blow out a team or they get close and they get some good pitching from their starters. So it's a team that you just don't think of on paper. You're looking at them going, how's this team good? And it's just along the lines of, you have a shortstop in Duran who's doing a really good job. Josh Jung is doing really good. It's just, that's a team across the board. It's pretty deep, all things considering. And so the reason why it's good, because the Rangers are good. And if the Tigers somehow pull a series against the Rangers to get over 500, then the Tigers are, then you have to go, shoot, that's pretty good. But yeah, that's where if something along the lines of, if Sean makes up a good point, outside of Martin Perez, it's just like John Gray. I don't know where you're getting from John Gray, but it's still, to me, if the Tigers can pull off a series victory over the Texas Rangers right now, sir, that's all. I just wanted to point out how good the Texas is playing, because how often I would bring up, this is actually the first time that the Rangers have ever been a part of that good and bad ugly history. Throughout the 6 years we've been doing this, I don't think I've ever mentioned the Rangers. I don't think about it. No, because I was just like looking for something different. I'm like, hey, have I ever thought about the Rangers? No. But yeah, it's, their farm system too is also Tigers. Thank you, Mason Engler. We appreciate that. Yeah. My bad. John mentioned this earlier, but he was mentioning the Blue Jays. They did put up 20 against Tampa Bay this week. So that was unexpected, but I mean, Rays won the series anyways. But the bad was that game for the Rays. That was a game where it was just an offensive explosion by Toronto. And to me, one of the things about what's underachieving about the Jays, add to what John's saying, is the offense is there. They have the offensive pieces to do it. They have some really good bats, but it's the pitching where you see it's Alex Manoa who continues, and Chris, I think he was somebody mentioned him as their bad maybe last week.
A couple weeks ago, maybe, yeah.
He's been terrible.
Yeah, he's been continuing to regress. You kind of wonder what it is, and it's the guy who has a lot of swagger to him, but it's something that Toronto was supposed to get some really good, him evolved to the next level a little bit, and really, over the last few starts of his, it's been nothing but the strikeouts tonight the strikeouts from his last start were, but in the month of May, he's risen, his FIP is now sitting at 6.26. It's one of the worst.
Yeah. So he walked 7 his last time out, and he walked 5 today, and I watched a fair amount of that. if you didn't know better, you almost suspect he's starting to get the yips because he was throwing some pitches that were really wild, almost taking guys' heads off. And they're in counts where you were not trying to hit somebody. He's looking really wild. And he was also on base. He wasn't holding anybody on. They were getting these sprinting leads. It's just, it's like his head's not quite there either. Like everything's going too fast for him. Really interesting.
The one theory I've seen thrown out about him is that he's really been negatively affected by the pitch clock. And you can see his tempo is down. He went from being basically 21 seconds per pitch last year down to 18 now, which is about as long as you can go. And with mid on base, it was close to 25 seconds. Now it's down to 21. I'm sure there are other pitchers who have done that and haven't been hurt by it, but who knows? It could be something where he's feeling rushed and he's got to get over it. But I don't know. Pitchers, we've seen this from pitchers before too, right? It just happens sometimes. Some guys just get out of sync and he's not necessarily the most lithe athletic guy. So maybe sometimes that can cause some issues with command for sure.
Yeah. And he obviously has the talent to be a great pitcher. I just think for Toronto, the pressure they're under right now, if you go back to 2020, if you would have told me 3 years from now, they wouldn't have a single playoff series win. And I mean, in May of 2023, they're in last place and arguably the best division in baseball. That payroll with all the trades they've made, all the prospects they've given up, there's a lot of pressure there right now to win. And it's going to be interesting to see how they respond.
Yeah, they have they definitely feel bad for fans up there because you just saw the Maple Leafs get smoked by the Panthers. And so this is a team you're looking forward to for the summer, pull it through. And you don't have the Raptors right now. But my ugly is Rob Manfred, who has not been in my ugly for a long time, but apparently he's a mob boss. He is the commissioner of baseball, but he is pulling off some sort of mob kind of like, if you don't do it, it's just going to happen here. And this is what the case for, essentially, he's threatening the Brewers' relocation as part of ballpark updates. So keep in mind that the Brewers opened the stadium in 2001, just a year after the Tiger Stadium or Comerica Park did. So this could, again, this is not just right now it's Milwaukee, but according, this is via the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, that Rob Manfred is reportedly in Milwaukee and will hold a press conference in which he urges major long-term renovations to American Family Field. And I guess the worst-case scenario would be the Brewers moving. Now, the Brewers have been there since the, I want to say...
69?
Yeah, 69. They were part of that American League expansion. And that was the home of Bud Selig for a while, the former commissioner of baseball. So the Brewers sat back. And this was also, Milwaukee's a baseball town. The Braves were there until 59, 60, I believe it was. The Warren Spahn, the Kane, was it Chris? The
Spahn and Sane and Pray for Rain.
Pray for Rain.
Spahn and Forget, better yet.
According to the report, too, the renovations, upgrades to seating, arenas, concourses, and gathering spaces would cost an estimated $428 million over the course of the next 20 years. And so the lease with the Brewers and American Family Field, which still sounds like that is what it is, corporate sponsorship, through 2030, and an agreement would extend that lease till 2043. So this is actually, they were originally the Seattle Pilots before they moved to Milwaukee. But is this Rob Manfred, does he just not think of the aesthetics of everything? Does he just go... Does he send out Chris Russo to do everything?
Dead. That's just a garbage you're giving.
He gladly takes on the Darth Vader role when he has to. He's threatened teams before with moving in other markets. I know he put the heat on Miami at one point there. He's putting the heat on other teams. So I think in the end, there's probably some appetite in Wisconsin. They're not going to move. They're not going to lose the Brewers. They'll get some kind of deal at some point. But it is interesting that these parks, just over 20 years old, and then all of a sudden they need $500 million of renovation. My goodness.
What are they putting? Like, I just don't understand what I'm missing here.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you want to go, okay, maybe something like, for example, Guaranteed Rate Field of Chicago, that stadium has, you can probably do a little bit of that. And you can needs a little incentive or a little bit of updates, but Michael has given us here some information. The Maryland General Assembly created $600 million for the Orioles to update Camden Yards. Same with the Ravens Stadium. And he also said that cities have to pay for the update to your stadiums every 5 years. Like, for example, I know with the Bengals, they have some sort of insane deal. They had to shut down the hospital in downtown Cincinnati because the Browns put in their clause that, like, let's say something new came out, some sort of technology scoreboard for the NFL, the city has to build it. And so they couldn't operate this hospital, I believe it was, and had to close it. So it's new techniques, I get it, but it's, you're putting a gun to their head, and it's just like, it's, I don't know, it sucks. It's unfortunate the business side of all sports. But again, I also see baseball being a sport that could see shrinking stadiums too, because the popularity of baseball has always been coming into question. For example, when Tampa's looking for the new deal, they're looking for a stadium that's smaller.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of even people, you're seeing this in the country, correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, but right now you're seeing people moving away from, I don't want to say suburban sprawl, but it's people moving further, further out.
Yeah, definitely that. I think also when you talk about small stadiums, if they can get this thing done in Vegas, they're talking about that being about a 30,000 seat tops, small facility, really, with a roof on it.
Yeah, there's just, it really depends on how it's really, yeah. And Michael brings up a good point that the teams wanting to control the business districts. And right now, look at the Tigers, they control that whole thing.
And that's always been a huge sticking point during labor negotiations, right? Is the teams want all the money from everything surrounding the parking lots and all that stuff. And the players like, well, they're coming here, they're parking because of us, so we deserve some of that. And the team's like, no, it's a parking lot. It's baseball. And it's all very annoying. I would think you could entice Milwaukee, be like, hey, if you update your stadium, you get the All-Star game. That doesn't seem, you could do that, and it's not quite as sinister, but maybe it doesn't work as well.
Yeah, and Sean in YouTube said that the where the Braves were playing is 20 minutes outside northwest of Atlanta. The way the Braves did that stadium too, it was all in secrecy. Where basically they're like, screw you, Atlanta, we're gonna go to the suburbs, and like that, the whole thing went down. I just remember that whole deal too, because they were building up the roads, and the roads were all torn up too, and just seemed like it was a whole nightmare. It's interesting. It's fascinating to me when you see like just how many times teams will not, the lengths they will do not to spend money, Oakland A's, to get a stadium deal. It's
10-41 Oakland A's.
10-41 Oakland A's. Imagine, I feel bad for any Oakland fans out there. I really do. This is a team that has a rich history, and we've talked about this before. And Samuel makes a good point, too. He was saying in our chat, I'm tired of hearing Rays fans say it's in St. Petersburg and we don't want to go there. The Lions played in Pontiac and the Pistons played in Auburn Hills. Tough. Figure it out. But he's right. I never really complained about that. But
the Palace was a nightmare to get to. But
oh, yeah. No. The location of the Palace was bad. And the Silverdome was a dump. Let's not cure ourselves here with that one.
All right. You guys want to get the questions out?
Yes, let's get the questions.
Do we have some? I didn't see any.
We got one from Deadly Ninja Bees.
Oh, all right.
It always comes through. So it said, are the Tigers the worst team of all time with the bases loaded? Seems like that.
Another question.
Let me take a look.
Oh, Chris is on the case.
Yeah, well, Chris is on the case. One thing I did want to mention too. So tomorrow, like I said, we mentioned this early in the podcast. We will be out in West Michigan tomorrow as the Whitecaps continue a series with Lake County. I'm going out there to see the high A debut of Troy Melton. And somebody was talking about Roberto Campos earlier. So we're going to get as many Roberto Campos.
You got it, John. I got it.
So we're going to try to get as many Roberto Campos live looks as possible. So
nice.
But as far as Memorial Day weekend goes, we do have something special planned for Monday. We're dropping a podcast where we had Roger Yoder, and he wrote this really good book, and it's called The Ultimate. It's a series of books, and it's the Ultimate Series books. And it's a book about it's called the Detroit Tigers, Michigan's favorite sports team. and it goes in the stats and just like top 10 players. And there's really, he made up a new stat for it too. And there's even a, there's really a, there's some data on your former favorite Tiger with the mom jeans look, Jerry Dong Leighton. And what I mean by that is the mom jeans look, but there's just a lot of cool facts about it. But let me pull up the Jerry Dong Leighton baseball card that I'm talking about, where he looks like he has mom jeans on. It is one of the funniest looking cards I have ever seen in my life. I have this card in my collection. And you're getting that picture, right, John?
Yeah, you want me to pull it up?
Let me pull up the Jerry Dong Leighton, one first.
Okay.
Because this is, look how high his pants are. Look at that. Come on. These are pants that hike up that high. Look at that.
Okay. Looking good. Looking sharp.
Yeah. Okay.
There was, we had a substitute teacher like that, that we called him the nutsack guy. It's so for reasons you can probably imagine, right?
Okay. Ooh, go ahead, Chris.
I look, so the Tigers are not even the worst team with bases loaded this year. They have the fourth lowest batting average with the bases loaded at 150. Let's see. Miami and Minnesota are third lowest. I'm sorry. Miami and Minnesota are worse. And they have the fifth lowest OPS at 494. Oakland, Cleveland, Miami, and Minnesota are worse with bases loaded. So it's not good. Not good. The Rangers are hitting 408 with the 1194 OPS with the bases loaded. And the Rays are hitting 440 with a 1215 OPS with the bases loaded. So that would be nice. Wow. But not the worst ever. No, just bad.
Okay. To explain this to our podcast listeners, we just had a comment in the chat about Chris and if he looks like Robbie Grossman. So here's a picture of Robbie Grossman. And
there's a little offshoot of this that we can discuss too.
Yeah, we're going to debate this once and for
all. Hold on. What we got to do? Hold on. We got to make Chris. Let's see.
Put a tiger hat on.
I'm trying to figure out how to do this. Oh, no. I got it.
Generic white guy, I think. Generic bearded white guy. My beard has gone super white over the last year, though. It's a bummer. Robbie Grossman has more virility than me.
I'm trying to figure out how to do this where I can make the presentation a lot better, and I can't. Picture in picture layout. Okay, you know what?
Now, doesn't Robbie Grossman look like Spencer Turnbull?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
All right, John, you got to figure out a way to. All right, there we go. Okay.
He's got more W eyebrows than mine. My little arch. I'm also not an athlete.
No, I found a way to do it. I found a way to do it because that way it's like a more of a side-by-side comparison. We can do this really quick.
In the past, people have compared me to Jeff Daniels. It depends on how I look, what day. But they just went with somebody who was a longtime listener finally came and saw us and said that we didn't look anything like they expected. And I'm just curious what people thought we looked like. I'd love to hear that if people have that experience.
Yeah, I you know what? That's a great question. Yeah, because there was somebody that said your voice didn't sound like what you look like, and I was like, what? Was I supposed to talk like this? I don't know.
I've had that experience before too, where you listen to the radio show forever, and then you see a guy, you're like, oh my god, it's a 4'4", and it's not anything like I expected. So I'm just curious, but there was an interesting question in here from Michael Meyer, who shut down the Tigers the other day. Early lead for futures game, Justin Aaron Malloy or Colt Keith?
Colt Keith.
Yeah, I would think so. One of the things that always comes into that though is position. And so I don't know how many third basemen out there are crushing it. I think Colt Keith has probably got to be near the top, but you can always guess, when in doubt, guess Dylan Dingler because he's a catcher.
Yeah,
they need a Dingler. It would have been probably Jackson Jobe had he stayed healthy. But
by the way,
which more radio silence?
Yeah.
I'm exactly 6 feet tall, Tyler. Sorry.
Yeah. That was what I was going to say. Yeah. I would say.
What did he ask? I'm sorry.
How tall I am.
How tall this was. Don't worry. At least you're not getting. You know what I've been compared to because of my size a little bit? Is I'm compared to the Geico commercial.
What?
Barbershop singers in the basketball court.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah.
All right. Let me get to the second part of the question.
All right. Okay.
Okay. And he says, how much better would the team be if Miggy / Vierling were Jorge Soler / Hunter Renfro? This division is winnable.
Jorge Soler has hit 15 home runs already, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. It'd be significantly better if we plugged 15 home runs into the lineup over the first 2 months of the year. So, yes.
Yes. They need power. That's what I'd say.
The Tigers made no discernible effort to improve the offense over the offseason. So, yes, Renfro and Soler would have added something.
Yeah.
That would have been nice in terms of, like, you know, power. You know what? Let me just play this real quick because that way you guys can put this in the context that apparently I look like this guy and I wanted to play it real quick before we get out of here. Yeah.
I'm going to post the Chris and Robbie Grossman thing on Twitter. if you don't.
Grossman or Grossman? You make the call.
That guy right there.
No.
That guy.
That guy right there.
The guy catches the ball.
Yeah.
Just from that one little clip, do you ever see his face?
Yeah, you'll see his face here in a second.
Yeah.
Can you sing? Facial hair.
Can I sing? No, I cannot sing. I'm tone deaf. I can't sing.
Oh, this is killing me.
No, I used to, when I played baseball, I was on a team called the Rebels, and so sing behind the plate, you know, Rebels have ridges, because I thought that was clever and would screw the other team's heads. Look, I was 12 years old in the 1990s.
I wish I had been umpiring that one. You're knocking off.
No, and Sean, you're right, that is an obscure reference, but somebody on Facebook, a family member or somebody went out of their way to go, Hey, doesn't he look like this guy? And I'm like, oh, so anyway, I'm not afraid to laugh at myself, but it was just also, yeah, you're right, Sean. Very obscure. And I didn't understand why. Then all of a sudden now there's a cartoon drawing Kanye West that I apparently look like too, that somebody sent me.
What?
You're a little weird, man. A little weird. So anyway,
this show has gone off the rail.
That's the end of the show. This is usually what happens at the end of the show. But if you're down, like Sean said, you know what? I would be down for a meetup. I do want to do a Motor City Metrics meetup. Samuel mentioned July 9th as a date too, but I would like, as a collective, we've been talking about this on our Discord. So, if you haven't joined our Discord, we talk baseball all day long with other Tiger fans, and we put people in there who tend to be what?
It's mostly baseball, but things go off the rails in there too sometimes.
Yeah, but we there's categories. So we have pop culture.
Yeah.
We have game day. We have a game day channel. We have a minor league channel. We have something for everybody. And I will put the link to join us in there. So if you want to join us and continue the conversation. Yeah. Was that it, gentlemen, for questions? Or was that?
Yeah, that's the only one.
All right.
So there was one more in the chat about Andre Lipsius. When does he get the call? He hasn't been hitting this year, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I unless there is a rash of injuries, I don't think we're going to see him up anytime soon until he gets hot. So it's the way it goes.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate too, because it's back to being streaky again. But I could see a total second half of the season where he just stays consistent, because that's been his MO since he's been drafted. So as far as show goes, like I said, we're going to have a special show I recorded earlier with Roger Yoder, talk about his book. And that's going to drop on Memorial Day on Monday. And as far as having a second show, we'll play by ear, maybe something on Tuesday. But otherwise, remember why Memorial Day is important. Thank you for everyone who has served, and we appreciate everyone's support tonight, all the super chats. Again, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so
really
much.
Mean that. We appreciate that. And so we'll be back. The Minor League Podcast will be back on Sunday night. So if you want to join us on the Tiger Minor League Report starting at 9 o'clock for a weekly recap, we'll be doing week 7 or week 8?
I don't keep track of the week.
No, it's week 8. It is week 8. Yeah. It is week all 8. Right. And we'll be, it's week 8. It's already 2 months in the season. And we'll be talking about Wilmer Flores had a nice start stuff's getting better. And Cole Keith. We might want to call it the Cole Keith Show. This is what we're going to just for now on, the Cole Keith Show.
Really?
And at some point, and also, if you've not checked out our interview with Cole Keith, please subscribe to the Tiger Mind of the Report YouTube channel, or please subscribe to our channel here, or the Pistons channel that John is going to be plugging into Harvard with. So myself, Youper, John, and Chris, have a good weekend, everybody.